WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Can you feel it? Summer is on its way. Temperatures are rising, and I don't know about you, but I have been getting excited to go to the beach. But if we're planning to dive into the water, we need to make sure to stay safe, too. Drowning can be fast and silent. So I sat down with Dave Benjamin, co-founder and executive director of the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project, to learn some warning signs. I started off by asking how people can end up in dangerous situations in the water. Here's Dave.
So there's always hazards around any body of water. And generally, when people are going to water, they have this security about it. Like, hey, I know how to swim. I don't really have to worry about it. Like, water safety is not, going to pertain to me because they know how to swim. But some general tips when people are going to water is making sure that if they have young children in the group, that there's always a designated water watcher when they're at the pool or the shoreline. Having flotation devices like life jackets, which are U.S. Coast Guard approved and properly fitting for the children as well as the adults. And if ever you see someone in trouble, call 911, alert a lifeguard, throw something, don't go, because unfortunately oftentimes we'd be rescued to become drowning victims as well.
Right.
So put on a life jacket if you're going to go into the water. But we recommend that people do not go in the water if they don't have lifeguard training, lifeguard equipment.
Right. And we'll talk some more about some water safety skills there. But you mentioned, people say, they kind of shrug it off and say, well, I can swim. This doesn't pertain to me. Is that a common thing? People maybe overestimating how well they can swim?
Most people don't even estimate how far they can swim.
Yeah.
Right. So the general reaction to how do we stop drownings is let's teach everyone how to swim. But then oftentimes we're not teaching that this is an endurance sport. Can you swim 25 yards the length of the pool, or you can can you swim 100 yards the length of a football field, 500 yards? People aren't putting it into that context. They say that I'm going to go to the pool and I'm going to go swimming, and then they are there all day. They never go swimming. They jump in the water, they cannonball.
And make the distinction between swimming and wading.
Right. And so for the most part, they spend all day at the pool and they never went swimming. They went wading. The only people who went swimming were the people in the lap lanes who were doing hundreds or thousands of yards. And most people aren't doing that, which is completely fine. But we need to understand what is swimming. And we've incorporated in our presentations that we should really define a swimmer as one person going 100 yards without stopping, because people can visualize that.
Okay. How would you define wading for people who don't
know
what that
means? Wading
is
just standing around in the water. Right? Throwing a frisbee. Someone, maybe they dive under the water, they take a few strokes, they're hanging out with their friends.
Yeah.
That's what most people are doing at the pool. They're not swimming more than 100 yards at a time, not even swimming the length of the pool at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we look at, say, the research, the American Red Cross did a survey some years ago, and 80% of Americans say that they know how to swim, and 54% of them couldn't survive a water emergency based on five basic skills.
Oh, goodness.
And the hardest skill was swimming 25 yards the length of a pool. So again, that's really what we have, whereas the majority of Americans say, I know how to swim, but they don't know anything about water safety.
Like, how strong of a swimmer are you? Yeah. Your group tracks the number of drownings in the Great Lakes. So what does 2024 look like so far? And what have you seen in recent years?
It's still early in the swim season, and we have kind of like, say, like seasonal hazards. Right now, I believe there's 15 Great Lakes drownings, five of those in Lake Michigan. We had a couple.
15 this year?
15 so far this year, five of those in Lake Michigan. Several of those additional drowning incidences were last listed in critical conditions, so we don't know the outcome yet. And there was also, I think, three incidences over the weekend that we don't have all the details of yet. So, I mean, this is the time of year where these numbers start going up daily and weekly, and it's just something that we believe is 100% avoidable if we're, you know, utilizing public education mm-hmm. and lifeguards and public rescue equipment.
I want to pick up where you left off on some of the water safety skills that you were sharing with us and have you break down a couple more. So you mentioned, you know, swimming 25 yards to the exit without stopping, right? The ability to do that. Floating or treading water for 1 minute.
Yeah.
We should know how to do that too. Turning around in a full circle and finding an exit. Explain that.
Yeah. So the order of the task for the swim test was fall in water over your head and resurface, tread water for 1 minute, spin around 360 degrees to, like, say, spot an exit, then swim 25 yards the length of the pool to get to that exit and climb out of water without any assistance. So being able to, A, stay at the surface and be able to spin around so you could see, you know, what are the hazards out here? What's the closest exit out of the water? And then being able to swim a minimum of 25 yards. That's the Red Cross basic swim skills that they tested the Americans on, mm-hmm. where 54% could not do that.
I see. So if we're ever out there and we're panicking, what is the absolute key advice here? What's easy to remember when you're panicking? I don't know how much you're thinking.
And that's another part of this is panic is the first stage of drowning. And when you're in the moment of panic, your experience is out the window. So yeah. Even if you're a very strong swimmer, if you go into this moment of panic when you're in water over your head, you can get in trouble very quickly. What we advocate is if someone is ever struggling in water over the head is that they flip, float, and follow. So flip over in your back and float mm-hmm. to keep your head above water, to alleviate the panic, and to conserve your energy, and then follow a safe path out of the water. A lot of children's swim classes now, they start off with the float concept first, and then they do the swim, float, swim strategy to get out of the water for young children. Mm-hmm. But again, we have a generation that had never got this in their swim lessons. They just learned freestyle, breaststroke, backstroke, butterfly if they're on swim team. So otherwise, yeah. the lay terms is just front crawl or backstroke.
Right, right.
And
you mentioned kids there. Who is most at risk of drowning? Is it children or, I mean, can it be anyone?
According to the Center for Disease Control, drowning is the leading cause of all forms of death for children under the age of 5. Drowning is the second leading cause of unintentional or accidental death for children 5 to 14. And then the nation as a whole, it's the fifth leading cause. So it does affect everybody nationwide and at different ages. Mm-hmm. And then when we look at the age breaks, we can identify what's the most common body of water. So children under 1, bathtubs is the leading body of water. 1 to 4 is the backyard pool. 5 to 14 is leading towards public pools and open water. And then for the nation as a whole, there's an update by the CDC and Safe Kids is that 62% of all drownings nationwide now happen in open water. And in 2018, it was 43%. So that number is going up mm-hmm. and pool drownings are going down.
So talking about that open water makes me think about the rest of us sort of around the peripheral watching something like this go down. Like what does drowning look like from a beach, right? It's not, I don't think, what we see on TV where someone's, you know, flailing their arms around and...
Right. So unfortunately, like cartoons, TV shows, and movies have inaccurately portrayed drowning with lots of yelling and waving, a long traumatic event at the surface of the water, mm-hmm. where if somebody's drowning, you might just see their head at the surface and that's it. They can't yell for help because they're choking or gasping for air. They can't wave for help because if you put your hand above your head, you increase your body weight out of water, put your mouth underwater.
Right.
And they're at the moment of exhaustion. So if someone's in this posture of actively drowning, mouth at water level, head tilted back, body vertical, doing a climbing ladder motion, they're going to submerge in less than 1 minute. So we have a very small window of opportunity to recognize that they're drowning and then get them something that floats immediately. And that's why lifeguards are so important.
Right. I mean, and do you recommend bystanders try? Like, what can we do to try and rescue someone?
Again, the basics for rescue is call 911, alert to lifeguard and adults, read something, throw something, don't go. Now, it became Illinois law in 2022 to have public rescue equipment on the lakefront on Lake Michigan in Illinois. That law just went into effect in Indiana as well, which has life rings. So if you see someone struggling in the water, get to that life ring and attempt to throw that life ring to them and then possibly pull them to safety. But the primary is we want to get the flotation to the person to interrupt the drowning process.
Yeah. How can wind and currents affect all of this?
There are several types of dangerous currents on the Great Lakes, and they're all driven by the wind. So the way we simplify it is whatever beach you go to, when you're looking at the water, take notice which way is the wind blowing. Is it blowing onshore or offshore or sideshore at an angle?
Mm-hmm.
Which way the wind is blowing is going to be the direction a current would be flowing. If the wind is directly onshore, you could have waves also onshore, which means the currents are going to flow directly away from shore. But most often what we have is longshore currents. So if the wind's hitting the beach at an angle, the longshore current flows parallel to the shore with the direction of the wind. And it could take someone close to shore down the beach a little bit to where the water's deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could also feed into a rip current, which would flow away from shore. A structural current is a current around a pier or a point,
mm-hmm.
a solid structure that jumps out into the water. It'll flow out and around that. So say primary point in Chicago, if we have a northerly wind, the north side of the point,
yeah.
you're going to have longshore currents flowing parallel to shore. It's going to hit that point, and it's going to be like a washing machine there, but the current will go around that and flow to the south side. And then even on the leeward side of the wind, it'll be calmer waters. That's where 57th Street Beach is.
Mm-hmm.
But the currents will increase again as you get farther away, you know, further south of the point.
Can you walk us through some of the dangers of swimming in deep water versus shallow?
You know, if someone drowns in 6 feet of water or someone drowns in 100 feet of water, the difference is not being able to stay at the surface. And even for young children, they could be in knee-deep water, but because of their body mechanics, their age, their strength, if they were to fall over in the water, they might not be able to stand up to get their mouth out of the water. So, I mean, as little as 2 inches covering your airway could be a drowning impairment.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't necessarily say, well, you know, someone drowned because of the extra deep water. If someone's, you know, 4 feet tall and the water's 4.5 feet, that's over their head. If they panic, you know, they submerge.
Right.
So we don't necessarily focus on the depths of the water. And for all the dangerous currents, they usually occur at the surface of the water, the top 3 feet of the water. So if there's a rip current, there's waves coming on shore and the rip current's flowing away from shore. When it gets to deeper water beyond the breaking waves, the current stops. So that's what we need to understand. And
I
then
see.
Another current we haven't talked about, but we get here quite often because of the south winds or southwest winds, is offshore winds. So if the wind is blowing from the land out to open water, anything that floats far and fast can go offshore. So kids on inner tubes or inflatable ducks or even people on stand-up paddleboards or kayaks, they get blown away from shore and the wind gets stronger the farther you get from shore.
Pushing them further
so
out.
Trying to get back to shore can be a very big challenge.
Mm.
So we have quite a bit of rescues on offshore wind days as well.
With all that in mind, I mean, how can we decide, you know, on a given summer day, on a safe place to swim?
It's always safest to swim at a lifeguarded beach. Chicago has 22 lifeguarded beaches, and then swimming there during the lifeguarded hours. That's going to be your safest bet for being safe in the water. We do know that there's a 26-mile lakefront trail, and people can jump off anywhere. We don't recommend it. If you are going to do it, you should know multiple exit strategies, and you could have something with you that floats.
Yeah, right? There are places that aren't designated beaches.
Right, and people are jumping off of, like, say, the bike path between Oak Street Beach and North Avenue Beach or going up to Montrose Beach. It's a vast area. It's not lifeguarded. And unfortunately, because, you know, it's a big city, it's not widely enforced. But again, if you get in trouble, you're going to want to have some type of flotation and hopefully the 115 life rings that the city installed on the lakefront.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've already know they've come into use multiple times over the last 2 summers. We've received reports of that. But you can't solely rely on that.
Yeah. Rocky beaches, too. What about those?
Yeah. You know, in and out of the rocks, sometimes you can't judge the water depth. And unfortunately, sometimes people are diving in head first.
Yeah. My least favorite.
If you were to jump in feet first and you hit a rock because you misjudged it, you might break your ankle or leg. But if you did that head first, you might knock yourself unconscious. And now you're going to unfortunately have a fatal drowning because, you know, you're underwater and someone might not recognize that or even notice it.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How can we address this issue of drowning from a public health perspective?
We believe that a water safety school curriculum would be the fastest approach to reach the largest audience in the shortest amount of time that would have maximum impact. Drowning is a public health issue, and according to the World Health Organization, it continues to be a neglected public health issue. So it's time that this gets passed nationwide, because right now there's only one state, which is Louisiana, which has a full water safety school curriculum. Illinois has K through 6, but it just started last year. We're pushing for it in Michigan as well with other organizations to have K through 12. But really, we should have a national water safety school curriculum, and every state should have its own individual curriculum, which also addresses their statewide hazards for water.
You know, in the past few years, and we've talked about it a lot on this show, because Chicago and lots of other cities, they're dealing with this shortage of lifeguards. How do you think we can incentivize new workers, Dave?
Well, that's been a longstanding conversation that we have this shortage of lifeguards. Yes.
It was telling my, I have two teenage kids and they were trying to apply for summer jobs recently. And over on the Park District website, all of the like camp counselor positions, like there were four or five positions that the applications had closed. The only one remaining is the lifeguards because they just can't fill that job.
Chicago did a good job filling it. All their beaches are lifeguarded. I know the pools are a little bit of a delay for opening.
Yeah.
But when we look at the shortage for lifeguards and when we looked at several states that we've been working in, it necessarily wasn't the shortage of lifeguards. It was the shortage in recruitment, the shortage in, say, sign-on bonuses and the shortage in pay that was really impacting it. We need to create a culture of water safety. So schools that do have pools, a lot of them may have lifeguard programs as a PE elective.
Right.
They could take the course. They become a lifeguard. They're lifeguarding their classes. But really, it's recruiting for the programs that we know that are very successful with their lifeguards. They go to the high schools, they go to the colleges, they go to the swim teams and water polo teams, and they actually present the career path of being a lifeguard, because being a lifeguard is a stepping stone if you want to be a police officer, firefighter, paramedic, U.S. Coast Guard, Department of Natural Resources, a doctor, a nurse, a teacher, you know, working in the public service, say like Parks and Recreation. There's so many different opportunities that come from it. It's a very responsible job. You are a first responder on the beach. You're doing patient care. You know, you're doing public outreach. There's nothing but benefits of being a lifeguard on multiple levels for whatever you want to do in life. You know, so it's just we have to sell it that way and promote it that way. And in California, we know that they might have 1,000 people trying out for 100 positions, right? Because it's a tryout. It's an athletic event. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing is, you know, if you're athletic and you want to continue to be an athlete even after high school or college,
right,
you know, lifeguarding is a way to do that, especially for open water lifeguarding is where we
focus.
As
you said, we don't sell it that way.
Right.
Yeah. Dave Benjamin is co-founder and executive director of the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project. Thank you so much.
Sure, absolutely.
Super helpful.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Max Louvers. It was edited by Daniel Tucker. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so that you never miss a new episode. We feature local stories and the latest news on the pod. You can also check out our website at wbez.org/reset to see our full archive of conversations. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again Monday.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely